Well, in a sense, they used to run right through town, but as the town grew up... I hate myself on tape recording.
Well, it makes you human. I guess everybody does. I'd have to pretend it's somebody else.
Well, some people sound good on tape recording.
It's funny, the voices tend to even out, you know, because they mustn't bear much alike. I must say, your president's voice comes over very handsome on tape recorder.
Good speaker.
You can speak anyway. I mean, the quality of the timbre of his voice is right. It comes right over very. He's a fine boy. Well, where were we? Now, we have to start to pick up where we left off and start again. Let's go on with Memphis.
Well, I don't really know enough about it. I got stuck there in the snow over Christmas, and I landed on one of these people and stayed there, and I'd heard about it, and I'd always wanted to go down there and see a little bit for myself. But the quality of life, you might say, is much more segregated there than it is here. There are a few white liberals. They do have a struggling little chapter of the Nashville Community Relations, or the Tennessee Council on Human Relations. But I was very impressed over and over again. This dentist,
Willis,
Bascal Smith.
Bascal Smith, yes, yes.
He, Willis started it, and Avon Williams, he and Willis dreamt it up. And I got in on making a reservation at the Holiday Inn downtown for Smith to make a test case. And I picked him up at the airport, and we went there, and he was refused, of course. Then the local Unitarian minister went in afterward to verify the fact that they did indeed have rooms when they said they did not. And Dr. Smith has said any number of times, he says, you know, we just don't have people like you in Memphis.
Like the Unitarian minister?
And myself. And I said, well, it doesn't seem strange to me because I'm sure we have a great many here in Nashville. I may be wrong, but I think we do. So that, as I say, I can't think of a better term than the quality of Negro life is much more segregated there. On the middle class level now, of course, I don't suppose there'd be too much difference on the lower class level.
Did you see the editorial in the press cemetery this week on the civil rights bill?
No.
Complete endorsement. Very positive endorsement. So the Senate doesn't pass it immediately. We are the mandate of the people.
Well, that's stronger than the Tennessean has been. They had one, but it wasn't the lead editorial, and it wasn't that forthright.
This was forthright. There was no possible shadow of a doubt about this. There was no if and no but. It was prominently displayed.
Well, this would go along with what you said, Evers had said, that once people commit themselves, because those papers at the beginning were not very helpful at all in Memphis.
Well, I've also heard it said that this may have some tie with the local political situation.
Well, they endorsed, both papers endorsed Negro candidates in the last election.
Yes, but this whole it's a question of a juggling for position with the Negro vote.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how this is argued, but I don't know about the pattern there. But this is one of the suspicions mm-hmm. I've heard about this editorial.
Well, Memphis politics is very devious locally. I don't attempt to understand it, but certainly all kinds of things are happening in Tennessee now because of the Negro vote. It's apparently almost everybody accepts the fact that if it had been withheld from Clement, he would not have been governor. And it's Ross Bass has senatorial ambition, so he voted for the bill. Richard Fulton has been very forthright all the way along in favor of civil rights legislation. I hope it doesn't kill him. But,
How old is he?
In his 30s, I think.
Well, he can play it for the future then.
He has strong labor support. Mm-hmm. And he has the Tennessean solidly behind him.
What line is the banner taking on this?
Oh. Forestville. Is that where that's Forestville? Very vicious, and they lose no opportunity to discredit it or anybody that's for it as often as they can.
That was what I thought was true. It was true in the past, but I hadn't followed it in the last
We heard all about Bayard Rustin's peccadilloes and the banner and the Tennessee and just glided over and things like that, you know.
What sort of peccadilloes?
Oh, he's had some kind of moral defense in Pasadena. I'm not telling anything on the man. I've never met him, but it is documented. And the banner went on and on about this during the March on Washington period. And they've been... they reluctantly accept changes once they're made here, but they always fight them. And the Tennessean exerts influence behind the scenes very often, very little. They don't editorialize very often.
But their behind-the-scenes influence is in favor of, quote, rational change?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an awful lot of things that go on now go on, pass through John Siegenthaler's office. For instance, John Lewis, have you interviewed him yet?
No, I have met him, but I haven't talked with him. I've met him.
He'll be back here this week. He has some trial coming up again. I just heard he would be back. He wanted a particular young businessman here, whom, if you ever had the time, Inman Odie, it would be worthwhile interviewing him. So he tells John Siegenthaler that Inman Odie ought to be on the marriage committee, and within a few days, Inman Odie was appointed. Well, there may have been other people that wanted him on there, but... in any case, I think Siegenthaler had something to do with it.
Lewis has a headquarters now in Atlanta, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's president of SNCC now. Right. See, he was head of the student movement here during the time, most of the time I've been here, and was heavily involved from 1960 on right here.
There's a section in Baldwin's last book to this effect, rough paraphrase. According to the best testimony, that of those in the embattled South, the Southern mob does not represent the majority of whites. It does not represent the will of the white majority, but merely feels a moral vacuum. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, I think it does. Because this is almost a truism now, that where... where the people who run the show, whoever they happen to be, wherever they happen to be in the community, say there will be no nonsense, there is no nonsense, by and large. Now, Nashville is a little bit in between, so you can find good illustrations of both here, which in a sense proves the point. In other words, at the times when the officialdom has been lax, there's trouble. If officialdom is forthright and says we are not going to have any trouble here, there isn't any trouble. Now, the violence I mentioned soon after I came here, the mayor had a tremendous number of problems. He was forced with this fight for metropolitan government, which he did not want. The police force was pretty demoralized, partly because of this. They didn't want it either, because he told them they didn't want it. And things like this were happening. Then, of course, other things enter in, too. Last spring, things were almost more than anybody could handle, but we had just gone over to metropolitan government, and nobody quite knew what was going to happen, you know. The mayor was uncertain how far his authority ran in some questions. He had inherited this deplorable police department. They did, by and large, a pretty good job. But still, there was not enough enough obvious open pressure by the leaders of the community that this was a disgrace to the city. The Tennessean didn't say enough. The banner had headlines like "Police Quell Negro Attack," which was... somebody wrestled with a policeman's billy club, and that's a Negro attack. Well, the behavior was certainly not nonviolent in many cases, but the total misrepresentation of the situation. You come from, if you read that it's happening in Cyprus, you'd imagine what kind of attack you would imagine it would be. And I think that, by and large, this is true. I saw this out west before I even came here. I was living in Arizona when it got in under the wire. Arizona desegregated in 1951. I mean, it had a rather patchy kind of segregation anyway. It was obligatory in grade schools and permissive in high schools. And the only communities where they had any trouble was the communities where the mayor said, well, geez, I don't know, we're likely to have trouble over this. Communities when they said, this is the way it's going to be, no trouble.
Well, some people, of course, will say to this remark of Baldwin's that silence gives consent. The mob is actually acting out the will of the majority, which is silent because it doesn't have to speak. It knows its job, that the mob will do the dirty for it.
I think the mob thinks that. I think that's the important factor, is that if the police get no instructions, they will, this has been said too in a southern community, they will assume that an attack against custom, even when it's not against law, is an attack against authority, and they will behave accordingly. If they have been told otherwise, they will behave in a different fashion.
There's another interpretation, different from that one, that the mob did not represent the will of the majority, but the majority is so fragmented, so divided, it has no point of focus for a statement of feeling or a statement of values. Let's say you have 60% are against what the mob is doing or stands for. It is no point along there where you can have a strong statement or a group action because it's too much spread in that majority. It's a negative majority there, not a majority for something. It's a majority against something that has no point of focus.
Well, I think both have probably been true. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't attempt to say which is probably what you get, but I would certainly agree that the mob does not represent majority feeling. At least in the areas where I'm very familiar with it, might very well in some black belt county. Mm-hmm. So even there, I have serious doubts. I'm not quite so sure, I'm thinking over the quotation, that I like the phrase moral vacuum very well, but at least I understand, I think, what he's getting at, and I'll go along with it.
I'm not sure I know precisely what he means, but yeah. I have a general notion of what he means.
but I'll just leave it at that. I get moralistic about race relations all the time, even though I have learned that it doesn't help very much. If, however, the people who pretend to be the guardians of the community's morals keep quiet, and this, of course, includes the church and even the administration. I mean, the Americans expect their leaders to make moral pronouncements as part of political life. But this I will go along with it completely. In other words, there is a moral vacuum in that sense that these people do not speak out.
Apparently, the survey of New Orleans, the Advisory Commission for Civil Rights, they said, what I read, their report, that not a single person of any significance as a community leader had uttered in the long New Orleans crisis. Mm-hmm. Not one had showed itself.
Well, New Orleans, I thought, was so bad that I'm inclined to go along with Thurgood Marshall's charge that the school board picked those schools deliberately. But that may be very unfair, but in other words, they picked the places where they thought they'd get the most promotions. I say this seems very unfair, but considering the situation, it may very well be true.
It's said in New Orleans, though, at the first day or so, there was no trouble at all. It was only after it was worked up, the second day, that you got... it wasn't a spontaneous reaction, but it was a devised reaction.
This is true, too, because the mobs just don't happen. You could see it on a very minor scale here. There were always a few young, they call them hoodlums, it's a little bit unfortunate, young white men wandering around downtown. Probably they'd be downtown looking for a little mischief anyway. And these old men on the sidewalks egging them on. And patting them on the back, figuratively or literally, you know. And even then, it took quite a lot to build up to action. I mean, these things don't happen. Those women didn't all decide to go down there and scream on the same day at the same time. Somebody was behind it, who I don't know. That, of course, is why it's so important in these these cases if the people who should speak out, assume they're supposed to, do, because that very often scares the people who are going to get the mob up or makes them feel it's not going to be a very worthwhile venture.
End of interview with Carol Bob of Fisk University, February the 16th. February 16th. Stop. End.
Okay, we'll play it back.